Yeah.
Yep.
What's going on?
Oh, not much.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
Home. I'm talking to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Glad to be back.
You and Mike's been out on the world tour.
Yeah. The mini hell tour.
Midwest swing.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't get to do as much racing as we wanted, but it was good. We had a good time with Uncle Blaze and Uncle Devin and all the guys around the shop. We learned a good bit and a lot of stuff that we can transfer over to our mod program, and I think it shows we've been pretty quick here lately.
Absolutely.
First, so, what's that?
So that's kind of what this podcast is about right here, about learning stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, how
well, maybe you convenient. Can learn me something.
Well, it ain't really about me learning you something. It's about my journey to get where I am, and I guess that's what this one is.
Yeah.
Okay. You got quiet on me. I didn't know.
No. Yeah. This is you, dog. Okay. So take it over from the top.
You're listening to Off the Gas and On the Mic with Chase Holland.
And it's really not take it over kind of thing, but it's just the many years of my life to get where I am right now. I have observed a lot of things around me, not just the job I was working on, but I was watching what was going on around me. And I always like to know how things work, whether it's a mechanical something, how it works, or I've always been intrigued by business and production and stuff like that. And I like to see, and if I could find a way to make something work better, that was fun for me. That's exciting. That's what I like to do.
He's so, an innovator.
Yeah. Huh? Well, I don't know. I don't want to sit here and like pat myself on the back. What the point is right here is I've done a lot. I may not have been great at any of this, but I've done a lot and I've learned a lot as I went. And that's what I mean. You know, I realize me and you've talked, and just the things that you learned out on the road, you know, whether it was USMTS, whether it was up at Mars Shop, whether it was at Uncle Blaze's, you know, y'all have learned a lot. And that's exciting to me to see, you know, when next time I see you and you're telling me all this stuff you learned, I'm like, yeah, that's cool. That's stuff that'll be with you forever. So, I know you needed some content, and I had some content here, and I offered it to somebody else, and then you got upset. So I was like, "Well,
hold up, they didn't have their stuff in production yet, or I'm sure you would have jumped on board and left CHR." But
So anyway.
You told me you're starting your own podcast, so you might as well put that on the job portfolio that's fixing to be the next thing. So along the lines of being an innovator and everything that you've witnessed and stuff like that, the only thing that memorable that you've told me that rings a bell to me is the tape measures. Make the tape measures go faster.
Yeah,
we'll get roll that. Back that's, in that's, faster.
That's down here a little bit. So I'll write that right here where we can get to that. But
yeah, that's the only thing I can remember. And in the well, there's a couple things, but yeah, I'll let you tell the story.
All right. So jobs. That's what we're talking about. Jobs. And hearing some of your past interviews and hearing what they did and got here and did that, and it's like, yeah, man, that's cool. And I really started thinking, and I've been like on these trips, been riding, thinking and filling in more stuff. So let's go back to 12 or 13 years old. I did what basically I imagine anybody in America's done, some lawn work, some back breaking, pulling weeds out of flower beds, and there's a person for that. I'm not that person. And I'm not knocking. It is a job that makes really good money, and there's a certain person to do it, but I'm not that guy. And I found that out at 12 or 13 years old. I knew that's what I didn't want to do for sure, because I'm not built for that. My dad and my Uncle Albert, my dad's side of the family has always been in automotive some shape or form. And my dad grew up around a mechanic shop. So dad and Uncle Albert had opened a business when I was probably 13 years old, I guess. They went into business on their own together, and it was called Albert and George's Automotive. And they did any kind of brake jobs, air condition. You know, they put engines in. They did a little bit of everything, but their bread and butter was probably brake jobs, oil changes, tune-ups, and my dad did muffler work. And I worked down there with them, you know, while I was out of school and on the weekends and, you know, worked on my race cars down at their shop. And so I did that for a while. I kept the shop clean. I did oil changes, and I was the brake pumper.
Man, I'm thinking about that, too. One of the stories, a story along the lines of that, you used to answer the phone, too. Yeah, can we talk about that story?
I was terrible at answering the phone. You know, and I don't want to say I'm dumb, but I'm just, and I don't want to say I'm slow, but I am kind of slow. I see my kids and my wife and everybody, the more people I meet, everybody has a strong suit. You were quick on the fly, can spit stuff out. And I was the guy, my hearing's a little off and I'm a little slow. So I wasn't very good at answering the phone. So I don't know what you're getting at, but I did have some hiccups.
It wasn't you. It was Uncle Ford. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That really happened. So, Uncle Ford, would stop by. He worked at the CB base down there, and when he'd get off at 3:30 or whatever, it was on his way home, so he would drop in there. And that was my dad's uncle, so he was my great uncle, and Ford Allen. And I remember Uncle Albert and my dad tied up under the hood of a car, and I probably wasn't allowed to answer the phone at the time. But I remember that phone ringing, and my Uncle Albert or my dad's like, "Unc, can you grab that?" And he said, "I got it." And he was like, "Albert and George's." And he got quiet for a second. You know, we're all quiet, like hands greasy, but we're listening. And he's like, "This is Ford Allen. Who the hell is this?" And we're like, my dad and my Uncle Albert's like, you know, like, "You can't talk to customers like that." And he come back with something like, "Well, yeah, Albert's busy. He'd have answered the phone if he wasn't, you know." And he was just, and they're like, "Whoa, whoa," and got over and got the phone. But yeah, Uncle Ford was a cat. He's somebody that, man, when he pulled in the driveway, I loved seeing him. And he taught me a lot about racing and working on cars. And he was a paint and body guy, so he was real detailed. And if I was doing sheet metal work, I made a mess of sheet metal. Didn't have near the kind of tools you got, but he would come by and, you know, show me little tricks and things. And yeah, Uncle Ford was a cat.
Yeah, so. I forgot. I couldn't remember who exactly it ended up being. But I know the phone being answered was
so. So I kind of in agreement with my family. You know, keep your grades up in high school, but you got to have a job. And so I worked after school and on the weekends, and I went to Catfish Charlie's. One of my friends, y'all have met him, Dale Moran. I think Dale worked at Catfish Charlie's and had told me they was hiring another bus boy, and that's what Dale did. So and Catfish Charlie's is an all you can eat catfish. It's not a buffet. They like bring it out to the table, so you're not grabbing it off a buffet kind of thing. But we had a little roll around cart like you got over there, and we went around the tables and cleaned them up, you know, and we bust them and then brought it to the back and we washed the dishes and things. And so when I worked at Catfish Charlie's as a young man. So a funny story about that. One of our buddies, he worked at the chicken place, and that was the name of it. They had one of those chicken cars. You ever seen one of them cars? It's like the roof of it has, I'm serious, like 6-8 feet tall is a chicken head that poked off of it. And it looked like it was a chicken car. And there's still, I saw one not long ago, like on sale on Marketplace or something. I almost bought it. But anyway, my buddy drove that chicken car. Like when he closed up, he was dating the owner's daughter or something. So he was like the manager, and he would drive that car to their house to lock it up at night. So he worked at the chicken place. I worked at Catfish Charlie's. Well, Catfish Charlie's, I'm sure they shipped in their catfish. I don't want to knock them or anything because they're still open, but I doubt their catfish come out of the pond. But what I will tell you, they had like some biscuits and stuff there, and you were able to throw the biscuits out in the pond while you were there to eat or whatever, while you were waiting. And they had some serious fish in there. And that's one thing about me. I loved to fish back in the day. And my buddy Brent, working at the chicken place, he called me up, me and him was talking, and he was like, we need to go fishing. I was like, man, let me ask them. So I asked them, and they told us, you know, no, we don't let anybody fish in there. So that should have been the end of that, but it wasn't.
So you asked permission.
And they told me no. Or they just told me that they couldn't, you know, that they don't allow people to fish in it. So Brent got us some chicken livers from his job because they fried them. So he got us some good bloody chicken livers and had them ready to go. I went and met him and helped him drop the car, the chicken car off. And then we got in my little car, which was my mom's car that I was driving at the time. And we went back to Catfish Charlie's, had her fishing poles and stuff with us. Well, I didn't want to park in the parking lot. This was after hours, of course. It was late at night. And so instead of parking in the parking lot, which would have been smart, but I parked on the side of the road and, like, turned my hazards on. Maybe didn't turn them on. I don't remember. But we got out, and it was, like, tall grass, you know, like 3 feet tall. No trees or nothing, just a field of weeds. And we went sneaking out there, and we were gonna go out through the woods and cut across and come over to the pond instead of walking right up to the pond.
Right.
We were sneaking.
Yeah.
Well, we heard a whistle, and back then I don't even think they're like that now. But a cop car, the way the lights were on the roof, they made a whistling noise coming down the road. Well, we were scared because we knew we were doing something we weren't supposed to do. I was probably 16, 17 years old, and we was down on our bellies with our fishing poles, and we heard that whistle. Well, blue lights turned on. And so we, in our minds, we're caught. He's fixing to shine, send the dog out. We're going to jail for the rest of our lives. We're scared because we're young. We're stupid, and we knew we wasn't supposed to be there. And anyway, the cop sat behind that car. I mean, my heart was pounding. And this cop sat there, and when he finally left, man, we got in. We ran out of there, jumped in that car. We never wet a hook, never got a chance to throw that chicken liver out there and hook on to one of them big catfish that we knew was in there. But, yeah, so the next day my dad was telling me that Uncle Albert got a phone call because the car that I was driving had been – a customer's car through the shop. Anyway, it was in Uncle Albert's name. It's something that was broke, and they bought it and fixed it, and then Mom was driving it. Anyway, it hung it back to Uncle Albert, so he got a call that night, and the cop said, hey, there's a car here that's got your information on it, what's going on with it. And he said, where's it at? And they was like, it's on Canal Road right here at Catfish Charlie's. He said, oh, that's my nephew. He works there. And the cop's like, oh, no problem. Okay, no, it must have run out of gas, whatever. And they went on. I didn't know that, or we would have went on fishing. I thought we were going to jail. But anyway, so yeah, that's a funny story about Catfish Charlie's and trying.
Well,
to
what made you quit there? Just because you couldn't fish?
Just moved on. I imagine that I just moved on after that. I had a friend that his mama owned a escort service, and not what you're probably thinking. It was like a mobile home, you know, down south here. A lot of mobile homes, a lot of moving mobile homes, and his mom owned the business where she would take a mobile home and move it from here to there. So I did that, you know, when I'm off on the weekends or whatever. It was a way to make a little bit of extra money.
Did you and Dale drag at the same time at Catfish Charlie?
I don't remember if we did or not.
Okay, I was just curious because y'all got some stories with y'all about how y'all just left at the same time.
That was later in life when we were welders, but okay. Yeah, we definitely
back to the mobile homes.
Yeah, so I did mobile homes for a little while. Sorry, y'all, I'm trying to keep up because I've had a lot of jobs. I'm kind of embarrassed about it, but not really, because that's my whole point. We did the escorts, you know, the mobile homes, long distance escorts. We used to go to Boaz, Alabama, and I was the spotter guy in the little truck with the lights on, the one that you people probably hate because they swerve over and block you, but I was the guy on the radio. When they would call on the radio, the guy out front would say, hey, we got a bridge coming up, or there's a car off the side of the road. It was my job to swoop and block people, and we talked on the CB radio to do that. So anyway, I moved on from there, and I hired in at Taco Sombrero. And Taco Sombrero, Dale left.
I know you're real quick. I know you're trying to get through these real quick, but go back to the mobile homes. Y'all tried to catch that tire that flew off that one time.
That did happen. Yes, we were behind one of those mobile homes, And I was actually with my buddy's brother. He was older than us, and he was driving the truck that day, and we had a half of a double wide that we were escorting. We were behind it. And he saw the tire on the trailer start doing that. You know, them things had them bolts with the wedges on them that holds them, you know, the wheel don't have a center hub in it. It's just an outer hub with them wedges. Well, that sucker started shaking, and he was like, that tire's fixing to let go. And he's on the radio trying to, hey, get her shut down, get her pulled over. Well, we're on the interstate, and this dude's running like 65 with this trailer, and it's wobbling. That tire came loose, and he said, there it goes. And I'm like scared. I mean, what are we going to do? You know, we're just following it. This tire comes loose, and you start seeing insulation and pipes and stuff flying out. And that tire, when it came out the back, it bounced, like hit the end of the trailer, and it bounced, and it left. Like, I'm leaned down trying to look, leaned up, and he and my buddy, he's up in the window too. He's driving us, and he's like, there it is. And he's worried about his mom's business, because if this tire hits somebody's car, we're in trouble. You know, she's got an insurance claim. So this dude is like, there it is. And I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking we're trying to miss it. He's dead center on the hood. Go! Just caves the hood in on this truck, and the tire goes off in the median. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And I'm talking about this sucker just demolished the hood on that truck. But he was kind of a hero. So
yeah, but another foot or two.
He'd have knocked the windshield out. Exactly. And I'm sitting there watching it hit. You know, I thought we were trying to miss it or something. But yeah, he nailed it. Good job to him. But yeah, that was wild. So
anyway, Dale left.
Dale left. I left. Dale went to Pirates Cove. He was making po' boys for Pirates Cove on when they were in Gulfport, and I was basically across the street at Taco Sombrero, which is somewhere we still eat today.
Yeah.
And my job there, they hired me in the kitchen, and I have no kitchen experience whatsoever. But I think I was a little maybe frumpy, and they didn't want me working the register. They had little cute girls that took orders up front, and then the boys did the back work, you know, and stuff like that. But I, you know, prepping, I cut tomatoes and things, you know, sliced up the tomatoes in the little chopper thing that they had. I remember you had to wear an old Kevlar glove when you did that stuff. I learned a lot doing that, and I cooked taco meat. That was one of my main things that I did. And to this day, I still love to cook taco meat. And we had a church function a few years back, and Adrian asked me to cook. Like, she bought tons of meat, and they were doing a taco bar. So I cooked all the taco meat, and I just seasoned it like I remember it being from Taco Sombrero. And she said that people at the church was like, this tastes just like Taco Sombrero. They thought we bought the meat from Taco Sombrero, but I actually cooked it. So, yeah, pretty good stuff. I learned a lot at Taco Sombrero, and they have a lot of hands. You know, Five Guys Burgers is supposedly Five Guys. I'm going to say Taco Sombrero's is like, yeah, I'm just guessing it's a 10-person crew. Like, they have a lot of people in there. But they fry their own or cook their own beans, and they have a drill. I don't know if they still have it, but they used to cook their beans in a pressure cooker every day and had some kind of drill thing that fit. All their kitchen stuff was custom built. Like, the thing that I cooked the meat in was a big stainless pan that had a plunger looking thing that went across it. Once it was done cooking, you push that thing across there and then prop the pan up, and all the grease run down one end, and it had, you know, the grease was drained out of the meat. Like, they had a system, and I still remember that kind of stuff because I was always watching and learning and, you know, stepping through all this stuff. I fried taco shells and all kinds of stuff. I moved on from there because of the chimichanga plate. We were just laughing the other day. Somebody said something, I don't know. Mikey was eating that chimichanga.
Yeah.
And I said I drug up at Taco Sombrero over a chimichanga plate, and we laughed about it. But anyway, I did. I told him, If one more chimichanga plate got ordered that night, I was dragging up, and I did. I left. So that was stupid. I quit a lot of good jobs, but learned a lot, really good people. Moved on, went to Fred's Dollar Store.
Dale was still at Pirates Cove?
Dale stayed with Pirates Cove for probably through high school. Dale didn't drift around back then. I think he was pretty
He still doesn't. He's yeah,
he does what he does. Yeah. But so yeah, I went on to Fred's Dollar Store, learned how to stock shelves and crush boxes. You know, you've seen them big stacks of cardboard that's compressed down. They had one of them machines. That was probably my favorite thing there. I would work so hard to empty the boxes just where I could use that machine. And it just, man, it just crushed them down. And it had some kind of tie wire thing that it wired it up. But, yeah, that was a pretty cool deal. And it had all these warnings and, you know, you can't do this without doing that. Because it would crush you, but we played with it. You know, we did. But so what else? One Christmas break, I remember getting an offer to go do some flooring work. Never again. I've never messed with flooring since. And it was a contractor buddy of mine worked for a contractor, and they had this big job of taking out. You remember the old, you probably don't remember, but these people made old 12 by 12, probably had that asbestos in them, the old floor tiles that they had in the school. They were real thin, hard little thin tiles. But anyway, we had to tear all of them out, and then he put ceramic tile down. And ceramic tile, that's my first experience ever messing with that. There's a lot of procedures to doing ceramic tile. You gotta have the floor right, put the grout down, put the thing in, then you grout it in, and then, man, you just have to keep cleaning it. And that was one of my jobs after the tearing the floor up. Just a lot of back-breaking carrying stuff, and then the cleaning. I remember being on my knees with a sponge and some kind of acid that they just keep – you just keep having to rinse and wipe. And this was, like, hundreds of square feet of this stuff. And, like I like
you
said –
like the Karate Kid, yeah, wax off.
And I never wanted to do that crap again.
I watch that on TikTok. Like, that's the stuff that I watch on TikTok, people doing floors.
What's weird,
stuff.
I would watch that now, but I'm going to tell you at the time, dude, and maybe back then if I'd have had a TikTok, I could have videoed it, and somebody like you could have watched it
and been like, yes, that's hard labor right there.
So at some point there, around 17, 18 years old, I went to Phillips Building Supply. I'm still trying to find my place, and it's just steady moving on, and I'm learning things, but I'm still a little dummy. And I, like I said, just I'm not sitting here telling you I was the greatest employee that anybody ever had, because I would probably hate me if I worked for me what I was back then. Anyway, I went to Phillips Building Supply, and that's where them tape measures come in. Had a few of my buddies. Dale's still making po' boys at this time, I'm assuming. But some of my other friends from school, you know, we our job was, when somebody would come in Phillips Building Supply back in that day, they would order everything up front, and then they would come through the gate, and they'd hand the ticket to the guy at the gate. Well, the guy at the gate, when we saw somebody pull up, we'd be sweeping or cleaning or horse playing, but we would go to the gate, get the ticket, and tell the customer, okay, let's go get you 2x4s first, you 2x6s, and we would guide them through the lot and go pick. We loaded their trucks, and sometimes they would tip us, other times they wouldn't. It depended on who it was, but I stayed at Phillips through my high school, you know, through till I graduated, and I learned a lot there. One of my favorite things, we hauled sheetrock. And that, nobody probably has ever said that's my favorite thing to do, but that was back before, you know. Now I watched him come up to Nana's, and he come up with a forklift, or I think he had the crane thing on the truck, and he just sticks it in the garage, and that's that. Well, back then, they pulled out a flatbed truck that didn't dump or anything. You had to pull the sheetrock down off the truck, one person in the front, one person in the back, and you carried each piece of sheetrock in and dropped it on the floor and stacked it up. Well, they paid us, like, I don't remember if it was 30 cents extra per person to carry it upstairs. So if it was a two-story house, but we had, you know, upstairs usually was wild.
You had to
be strong. So it was like a workout for us. And, I mean, we turned into some tough little jokers from carrying all that sheetrock. And it was kind of a love-hate thing, you know. You hated it. Oh man, we got to do 80 pieces, got to go upstairs. But when you were done, man, your shoulders was burning and you felt strong, and it was like a good workout for you. So kind of just enjoyed that was a good job. When I graduated high school, I didn't know what I was going to do. A lot of my friends and stuff were going to college.
Yeah, where was Uncle Wayne at this point? You've talked about Dell and everything like that. What was he doing at this point?
So at that time, where we're at right now, and I'm 18, Wayne had Wayne was skinny. Like, he was a tiny little toothpick dude, right? And he was like that his whole life, just a little string bean. And I was always husky, heavy. And this dude at that time was working at a place called Struthers, which he was I don't even know what he did. I guess he had a desk job because he was eating out of the vending machine. I'm not picking on him because I've always been thick, and I don't pick on people for being heavy. But that sucker blew up. Like he got married. Maybe Gage was born. Yeah, Gage was born, his oldest boy. And, dude, he swole up. But he was in construction. But he was, like, in an office position kind of thing. And so, yeah, that's where Wayne was at that particular time. And anyhow, I was trying to find what I was going to do because, like I said, my buddies was going into college, and I felt lost, you know. And they may still do that, but they brought recruiters to the school, and it was military, and it was colleges, and, you know, and they were dropping off paperwork and trying to get you to come talk to them or whatever. I honestly thought about the military just because I didn't know what I was going to do, but I had family members that had been in the military, and I knew it was a good, it had retirement, and it had benefits, and it put structure in your life. And so I've always respected that, but it wasn't something that I had dreamed of doing. And, I'm going to say I was probably pretty close to talking. I may have even talked to a recruiter, but I just never jumped on board with it. Coca-Cola is a local company to us down south here. And, there's a big Coca-Cola plant. And if you worked at Coca-Cola, you had a good job. You know, everybody knew if you worked at Coke, but you didn't just hire in as having a good job. You had to work your way up. So I actually went straight out of school and went and interviewed with them, and they hired me. And I did work at Coca-Cola, but I didn't make it. And it was just demanding. I was trying to race, and they wanted me to work every Saturday, Sunday, Friday. You know, it was you had to go into these stores and restock is where I was. But eventually, if I could have made it, I could have worked my way up and had a regular weekday job. But since I was on the bottom, I just didn't survive that and didn't make it. I was going to be a fireman. You know, Rocky would appreciate this. I had a couple people my age, and they were looking into that and hired in as firemen. And I'm like, man, that'd be cool. It's got benefits. You know, I didn't know what I was going to do. So I took the test. I went down and applied and took the test, and I failed it. You know, I failed the fireman test, and that ain't even the physical part of it. I failed the written part. And man, I remember really getting down on myself. I knew I was different. I knew I thought different than people. And that's not saying that I'm up here and they're down here or vice versa. We're just all different. All of us think different and look at things different. I didn't pass the test. And that goes back to my driving test. You know, when I was 15, I failed it probably three times. And there's people, I've talked to people that's failed it multiple times, and I've talked to people that the first time they get it, you know. And I always tell them, if I see a young person that's struggling with it, hey, it's okay. You're going to be all right. Yeah, I failed it a bunch, you know, and you'll make it. But, that didn't work out. Later on in my life, I even took a CSX railroad test. I wanted to railroad, same thing. They make good money. They have good benefits. It's a good thing to retire from and everything. So I was on a kick. I was going to go work for the railroad, and I took that written test, and I failed that, you know. So there's been a lot of failure in my life.
You might have ended up working for Tank Lining of Paris.
You never know.
You know what I'm talking about?
This is different.
You'd have been digging ditches an independent, and stuff. That's, you know, what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know where you're going with that. But, yeah, this is an independent. You talking independent. This was a show enough not that they're nothing, but it is. This was a CSX railroad.
Right.
This is a big deal. Yeah. The big CSX. Anyway, paint and bodywork. So I kind of was trying to find my way, and hey, what about maybe I'll learn the paint and body trade? So I went to work for Mitchell Williams, which Mitchell passed away a couple years ago, and Mitchell taught me a lot. He was a racer that we all looked up to down here, you know. He raced with my uncle, Wallace Allen, and several other, you know, people that we talk about all the time, the Coopers, and, you know, there was a lot of them right there, that the McQueens, they all raced with Uncle Wallace and Mitchell Williams. Luzenberg, Jamie raced with them. So I went to work for Mitchell, you know, this would be right out of high school, and learned a lot. I mean, I got to the point though where, like, Mitchell would be like, hey, I need you to have this car, this truck door and fender primed in and wet sanded before I get back, and I'll spray it. And like, I would go that far. Like, he had already done the Bondo work, so I would spray the primer. He had taught me that much, that I was that good, that I could spray primer and then wet sand it down and have it ready when he got back to paint. Like I learned a lot with Mitchell. And I hate painting because it just ain't my thing. But if I needed to paint something,
you could do it.
I could do it. I could wipe Bondo. You know, not perfect, but I could wipe Bondo. I could do, you know, he taught me a lot.
That is a job, though, that you've told me a lot of stories about, looking back at it. Like, you didn't just do paint and body work when you worked for Mitchell. Like, you said that he had pretty much a farm.
He did, yeah.
And y'all had to haul scrap or something like that.
Yeah, me and Michael Williams,
Y'all didn't just paint cars.
No, sir.
Y'all got in.
There was always something. Like, Mitchell was the kind of guy, he'd be like, we're going to try to get this one knocked out today. We'll get started on that one. I need you to finish detailing where they can pick that one up. And his phone would ring, and it'd be his neighbor that's got a pig loose, you know. And now all of a sudden all this stopped, and we're going to catch a pig. And that's how it was with Mitchell. I loved it, man. And one story about Mitchell I'm scared to death of bungee straps. I was with Mitchell at his property. He had a little farm, like you said. He bought some land, had it cleared, put a fence on it, had a pond. And I can't even drive to that place. That's what's weird. It's right around in this area, and I've looked for it before, but I'm confused to where exactly it was. But we had went to Mitchell's place, and I don't remember what he was trying to do, but I remember he had a wooden post in the ground there, and he had a bungee cord, and he had that sucker pulled, and he was trying to pull it tight to wrap it around to make it tight. And as he was pulling it, you know, he's right up by that post, and I'm just standing back, nothing for me to do there. And man, he had that joker in a bind, and it came loose on the other side and whooped around that thing and hit him, almost knocked his eye out. And I'm standing right there, and I saw it hit him, and it hit him right by his eye, man. And I'm gonna tell you what, he's lucky he didn't lose an eye. And to this day, when I see somebody really bowing down, I'm like, hey, watch your head, watch your eyes, because it just scares me. He's so close to losing his eye on that. But, yeah, I didn't mean to get sidetracked.
No, real quick, you need to tell about Michael, too. You need to tell about y'all's hauling scrap days.
I can't really tell that, because it wasn't scrap. It was Mitchell, and I was a kid, man. Mitchell sent us with some, I don't know what it was. I don't remember. Let's just call it yard debris, because in that way it sounds like leaves and limbs, okay?
Yeah.
He had an old diesel truck that probably back then probably wasn't a turbo diesel, because this had been in 95. So this was an older truck, so it was before the turbo diesel. But me and Michael had that thing loaded down, and it's over where Palmer Creek Subdivision or trailer parks or whatever. All that was just like river roads and stuff, dirt roads. And man, me and Michael went to go dump that stuff, and son, he run the mess out of Mitchell's old truck. And I was just hanging on, because we were both kids, but we were both dirt trackers too. You know, I was racing at the time, Michael was racing, Mitchell was bad to the bone. So Michael dirt tracked the crap out of Mitchell's old truck. And anyway, when we come back, his old truck was running hot and leaking oil, and Mitchell's like, what in the world happened to my truck? And we both like, I don't know, man, it just kind of overheated, you know. But yeah, Good times, man. Good times. Mm. So,
so you drug up on Mitchell.
I drug up on Mitchell because I got back into the trailer stuff. There was a new trailer place that had opened up on the highway by my high school that I went to. And the guy, I had caught word that he was looking for an anchor and re-leveling crew. And he wanted to start a crew, or, you know, a guy or two guys to come do that. So somebody had told me about it, and he was paying $100 a day. And I was like, dang, you know, $500 a week right here, you know, let's go. So I went and talked to Mr. Billy Thompson, and I sat down with him, and he told me what he was looking for. So basically, he gave me a truck, he gave me a generator, he gave me an impact, extension cord, a level, hammers, whatever I needed to go and re-level trailers. So he sold mobile homes. They would go out and set them up. My job was to go anchor them as soon as they set them up. And then a couple months later, after they settled, you know, this thing made, they had a door that was hanging or whatever. Well, when you pull up, you could see the roof of the trailer. You know, you could see where the dip was. And I'd be like, what door's hanging? And sure enough, right where that dip is, that's where the door would be catching when it would shut, you know. So I would get under there with jacks and blocks and jack it back up and put wedges in it and go in on the floor. You know, I could find the spot on the floor in there that was out of level and level them out. So that was my job, to go around and re-level trailers and anchor new ones. And, man, that was another one of them jobs that, son, you wouldn't have wanted to mess with me when I was working there. I promise you, if I got you in the headlock, you wouldn't have got away. Because I, down south here in this red clay, when you run an anchor, this machine is it's a pipe threader is what it is, that they modified the head on it to fit over an anchor. So when you pull the trigger, it's like, and so when you land off the trigger, it's like, so if you hit a root, it didn't stop. It went and pulled you around. So it was a challenge for me. Are we going to break this anchor? Are we going to twist it in half? Or are we going to cut the root? Because something's got to give. And that's how I used to enjoy that, man. It was always fun to
apparently not, because you ended up quitting.
Yeah, I quit them,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you quit that. So
so what happened next? Now you got Wayne, you got Dale, you got Jamie Favre, you got some friends that I went to school with. And they all have became welders. And, man, they're making like $18 an hour. And here I am making $100 a day. And I had the pencil and paper, and I'm like, and they were making more money than I was making. They were working in Louisiana and stuff. There was down south, there's shipyards.
You had to drive further. Yeah. You had everything else. It costs more money to go
do
it.
So it's funny for you to say that, because you know, you don't think about that. You just looking at
me. Oh, yeah. You're the one that brings that to light to me every time. I'm like, look, they're racing here. Chase, they're racing for $800 to win.
And that's why I can't get mad at you, because we were those people. Like, it don't matter if we got to drive 6 hours a day, you know, round trip. Look at what we're making, you know. So, we were working in West Wego, Louisiana, is where they were. And my buddy, I know you've seen Cletus Kneecase.
You
talked to Cletus. He comes around to the races. His daddy was the foreman. So Wayne, Dale, Jamie Favre, all of them was working for Cletus's daddy. And Wayne's telling me all about, boy, we can get you on. You know, Wayne's like this big dog, because he's been there for a month. So he's there now. All of a sudden, everybody's, you know,
he hasn't drug up like y'all drag up immediately. Yeah. So he's got job security.
Yeah. So we go, they tell him about me, you know, and he's like, yeah, bring him in. We'll give him a test. Well, I ain't never like welded like that. You know, I've welded on a race car and it was terrible, but they bring me out there and I made a mess out of the test and kept, you know, they helped me set the machine and, just look, all you got, just pull the trigger and just do it. And it was probably very ugly, but they hired me. So I'm on the job. I'm official. I got me a hard hat. I brought a bucket because they told me I needed a bucket, and I'm there.
It didn't make it.
So we're there. Yeah. So we're there, and they got these big. We're working on hopper barges that haul coal and stuff. So, and this is at this. I'll call it a shipyard, you know, and it was rough. Now, it was a rough place, but it was a lot to see. I'm watching everything going on. Well, they had these big cranes, and they're like on rails, so they straddle. Like if the boat's here, they come over it, and they're able to go down, and they go on to the next one. They call them gantry cranes. Well, I walk up with my bucket and stuff, and I don't really know what's what, and I'm looking around, so I'm like, my bucket should be safe right here because I don't want to be in the work area. So I set my bucket where I thought we were safe, and we were standing there talking, and that crane, beep, beep, and it's coming down the line, and they was like, some idiot put his bucket on the tracks, and I was like, dummy.
What an idiot.
It's my bucket, dog. That crane got on my bucket and was just tearing. Look, my shield, my chipping hair, and I'm over there trying to yank my bucket out. So that was my first big boo-boo, is I left my bucket right by the crane
track.
Uncle
Wayne tells that story way better.
Yeah, so I bet he does. But
and then you blew a hole through whatever you welded on.
Yeah, so, I had no experience. Like, I didn't know we were flux core welders, certified flux core welders. I'm making $18 an hour, chest bowed out, bad to the bone, had that hat with the little thing. I had that joker right here. Nobody wanted to mess with me, but I couldn't weld on the job. So we were welding. I was welding these vertical welds. And anybody can weld flat, but this vertical butt weld, and man, that, looking back now, that material is not very thick. It's like 3/8 of an inch thick, if it was that. Maybe it was 1/2 inch. I don't know. But these old fits were terrible. It'd be perfect and then wide. And anyway, I'm up on a ladder, and I got me a hole. And what you know about MIG welding, flux core welding is even worse because it's hotter. So I had that weld coming up. And all of a sudden, it just went, and just, it's like water. It just went in, and sparks popped on the ground. And I stopped, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, I got a hole here. So I fire up down under it a little bit, and I go, and when I get back to where that hole is, when it blows out again, I got a bigger hole. And about that time, Wayne said, hey, boy, you all right? And I look over at him, and I'm like, you know, I'm doing this. Like, I got a hole. And he's like, you okay? And I'm like, no, I got a hole. And he's like, what? And so he comes over and climbs up on my ladder, and he's like, oh my goodness. So I've taken this butt weld that's supposed to, you know, when you're done, you're supposed to have no more than 1/2 inch wide weld. And I got a 1 inch hole blowed in 1/2 inch out of each side. So one, we got to fix it, but then we got to cap it when we're done and make it look good. So yeah, it was fun.
Gave them some extra work to do.
Yeah, I learned. And they prank. Man, them boys prank me so bad. Like we were all sharing the same Skellen gun, we called it. It's like an air chipping hammer thing. The airline hooked to the back of it. When you push the trigger, it was like a chisel. But we called it, like I said, a chipping gun, a Skellen gun, whatever they want to call it. And that's what we got the slag out of those welds because, man, you when that first pass was so deep, you'd wear a chipping hammer out. So we all shared that. And them suckers took and loosened the airline. And this is industrial airline. Son, this airline's like this. I mean, like huge airlines. Them jokers took and loosened the fitting up to where it was like just barely hanging on, knowing I was coming. They kept asking me, you need this chipping hammer? You need it? And I'm like, I'll get it. Well, I finally go get it. And son, I get over there and I start, that airline come loose and about beat me to death. Cause I panicked and I of course try to grab it. And you ever grab, you want to grab the end right where it's coming out. Cause if you get this far from the end, that thing was and they laugh. It. Thank goodness they didn't have like cameras on their phones and stuff back then, man. I'm the guy that gets mad when something like that happens. Like I want to fight people, but there was too many of them. But yeah, they did me wrong. in a lot of ways. But later on in life, I was that guy passing out those pranks and stuff. But yeah, we worked there for a minute. We had some really good times with some really cool friends and stuff. And
you say you worked there for a little while, what, 4 months? And then y'all all drug up at
probably
once?
About 4 months. But let me tell you something. I was a welder when I left there. So I thought. So I came home, and there was a place in Pearlington, Louisiana, a shipyard called Gulf Coast Fab. And, man, it was a tough place to work, but some of the best welders I've ever seen when it comes to structural flux core welders came out of that place right there. I've welded beside some of the best. They've taught me a ton, and that's where I really became a welder. But I wouldn't have been able to get a job there if I hadn't have went and got that experience over there with Greg Niekase and Wayne and them, you know. And we were contractors over there. It was just a, you know, we could have got laid off at any time. They knew we would drag up at any time. But so we end up at Gulf Coast Fab, Dale, Wayne, Jamie Ford, the whole crew of us, son. We was a crew, and we thought we had it. And we did. And I worked there for a pretty good while. And then it got to the point that, like, I was such a good welder. In my mind, I'm saying, you know, I'm not sitting here saying I was awesome. I'm saying we thought we were so good that now we're ready to travel. We're ready to go. If they was paying 20 cents more an hour, we'd be talking to our boss talking about, hey, over there in Pascagoula, they paying 20 cents more an hour. We're about to go. And they would be trying to talk sense to us. But, dude, it's just an ego thing. If somebody somewhere within, you know, 100 miles was paying 20 cents more per hour, we were gone.
I've learned
the math on that.
Yeah. I've learned in life that it takes different personalities, like different mindsets to do certain jobs. And there is nothing like a welder's mentality. Like there is nobody else on this earth that can match a welder's
So mindset. I've got a foreman sitting here going, buddy, it's $2 a day. You know, I'll give you $2. Yeah. Go get us a drink. You know, and I'm like, nah, you don't understand. It's $2 a day.
What's that? $10 a week now that you added on top.
That's right. That's right. So. But it cost you 100 more in fuel, but you was making more money per hour. So we just stupid, but that's how we were. That's how we rolled. I worked at a place called Ham Marine in Pascagoula. There was a place in Gulfport, Avondale. I still passed by there. I spent a pretty good while at Avondale in Gulfport. And Avondale also had a shipyard in New Orleans. I worked over there at one point. Hated to drive, but, you know, it was what it was. I remember working right in New Orleans when you're going over to, you know, I ain't been that way in years, but when you're going over to Mississippi River, there was a building, like if you're headed west, there was a building on the left on the east side of the river. Big old like shipyard kind of building business, and we worked there, me and Wayne did, one Christmas. I remember, it's weird, I remember it was whenever Princess Diana passed away. We were working night shift over there, and I somebody had to look it up. I don't even know when it was, but I was working in New Orleans at a night shift, and we were these boats we were working on, it was real cold. These things had something inside of them. Whatever they were hauling was like rubber. And when we would be in there welding, and when you set your bucket on top of this stuff, it was like tar or something. You set your bucket on it and you start welding. Well, 20 minutes later, you get up and you know, you could tell your bucket's stable, and you look down and your bucket has sunk that far down into that stuff. Then you had to sit there and pry your bucket out of it. And we were welding on top of it. Imagine it was flammable and probably very dangerous to be welding in that stuff. But, you know, I breathed some bad smoke through the years in them inner bottoms, double bottoms in the shipyards and stuff. So, but I was young and didn't, you know, all of us were doing it. Yeah, so it wasn't, we had to be
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, he gets cancer and I get cancer. Well, he got it too.
I don't really remember. I knew cancer was probably killing people back then, but I don't think we kind of connected the dots, or maybe we thought we were young and invincible, but I don't remember worrying about that. Like right now, when I see y'all breathing it, like yesterday we had this car running and it was rich in here, and I'm in my mind, I'm like, we don't need to be breathing these fumes, you know? And back in the day,
that was normal.
That was good. That was considered good oxygen.
Yeah.
That smell and everything. But I worked at Avondale, Gulfport, New Orleans, Ham Marine, Bender Marine in Mobile, Alabama. Man, Chase, I think we're still making $18 an hour. It seems like from the first time I started over in West Wego till, you know, here we are, I think I'm still making $18 an hour over in Mobile, Alabama. Still, right before we go in the tunnel, I always say, yeah, that's where I used to work. And I did. I worked there for a minute. Almost 2 years, probably. And while I was working there, we had a job going in Picayune, where Mikey's from. Don Haley owned the welding and fabrication shop there. And
he talked real fine, real Cajun.
Yeah, yeah. So Donnie Haley had a fabrication shop where he did handrails and stuff. So for him, we would go to these new hotels they were building in New Orleans and Slidell and all over. And we built the handrails in his shop and we would go install them out on the job. And he had the big drawing package and we would build them exactly the way it said to build them. And then when we get on the job, we'd have to cut them all up because it was nothing like we built them to the drawings. But one thing I learned, engineers drawings and all that stuff don't sometimes, you know, if somebody gets off a little bit in the concrete or whatever, it goes a long way.
Yeah.
And the guy coming in to put the landing pad for the stairs is the guy that's got to modify everything. So so we did a lot of that kind of stuff, a lot of handrails, a lot of I was working for Bender Marine, work a full day there, and then I would go night shift and fab handrails. And it was like they would cut them out during the day and tack them to the table, and then we would come in, throw the pickets in them, and weld the pickets. I just remember having a radio blaring. I was a young man, and we worked a lot. I worked a lot back in them days and made good money, but... any questions?
Well, not really. I mean, when do you decide this ain't for me and start selling cars?
Man,
and stuff?
I loved welding. I did love welding. So probably what I skipped and man, I turned into a welder. And I'm being serious when I tell you, when it came to flux core welding, I was one of the great ones down here in this area. Like I promise you, I could lay down some flux core. And by then, you know, we're doing nothing but X-ray welding. Like, you know, originally they wouldn't have used me to tack up a something that they were going to break down and tear up. You know, by the time where we're at right now, I'm trying to tell you, I was a certified welder that I was the guy that came and did the butt welds. Cause like when I first started working in the shipyards, we were allowed, like if there was a cross weld, I guess what we used to call it, where a seam went this way and a seam went that way, I wasn't allowed to get within that far of that seam because that was going to be an X-ray weld.
Yeah.
And not saying that my welds were bad because I was learning how to weld, but it took a certain person to weld that cross. And by this time, I'm the guy that everybody's like, get out the way. He's here. He's fixing to make that X-ray weld right there. And look, we with me, Wayne, Dale, all of us was that guy. Jamie Favre, we had all turned into those kind of welders. But what comes with that is you cocky. You oh, man, nobody can tell you what to do, you know. if you drink a cup of water and throw the cup on the ground, and foreman says, "Hey, pick that cup up. We just cleaned up in here." We'd drag up, like we're gone. And it wouldn't just be me. The whole crew would be like, "He tried to get Wayne to pick that cup. Tried to get him to pick that cup up. They got somebody for that." You know, like we were that stupid. Like we thought we were that good, and we would all quit over something stupid like that. Probably not that bad, but yeah, if they wanted us to sweep or something, we're like, dude, we're welders. We don't sweep. That's a true story.
Like I said, going back to what I said, the welder's personality, a true welder, like their personality, their characteristics and stuff, unmatched.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were son. You didn't talk. If we thought your tone was bad with one of us when we come in, we'd drag up.
I need to get Uncle Wayne on here. His story only needs to be all the places he's drug up and why he's drug up.
Yeah. So, anyway, I don't know, Chase. I'm probably, at this time, I'm probably 21, 22 years old. Like I said, welding x-ray butts and stuff. And, like, man, all of this stuff I'm telling you, I learned and learned and learned. And when I wasn't welding, I'm watching fitters. Watching how they fit stuff and come alongs and dogs and wedges. So I'm watching them and I'm like, I could do that, you know, and I'm even watching the helper because I skipped that step. And really I should have started as a helper and a grinder and he got the tack for the fitter, you know, but I skipped that. And it cost me learning on the job, which maybe I went quicker, you know, and didn't get hung somewhere where they don't appreciate you and they leave you as a helper. And I saw that kind of stuff, which helped me later when I became a business owner myself. I know to, you know, appreciate what somebody's doing and see that they're putting forth the effort to be better, and therefore I need to take care of them, you know, and not wait on them to come to me and ask for a raise. I set them down and say, "Hey, I see what you're doing, you know, let me help you out right here. I appreciate you," kind of thing. And that's what kind of stuff it taught me. But like, you know, to get down into the welding a little bit, and this is things you don't know. I mean, you throw some stuff together and you weld it. On these ships, man, if this plate's 1/2 inch, 5/8, 3/4, however thick, you know, all different thicknesses of plates, there were times ceramic tape. I don't even know if you know what that is.
I don't know what
that is. It's got like a shiny tape on it, like what they would use on looks like what they would use on
air conditioning HVAC tape.
Yeah, but it's taped. That tape is stuck to little ceramic squares. Like you would be amazed what this, I'm being serious, what this stuff is. And when you peel the sticky stuff off, and this tape comes in links about that long, you peel this sticky stuff off, and you go, like if we were going to weld a thing right here, we would go up underneath there and put that tape underneath there. So we got a gap this big, and
you
it's
got
just
a 3/4 inch gap.
Yeah, and it's just it's two flat pieces of plate, no bevel or nothing. We put that tape up underneath there, and it's got that little ceramic setting under there. And when you fire up and get her going, you get her glowing and start welding on it. Well, when you're done with this weld, you go under the bottom and you knock that tape off. Most beautiful weld you ever seen on the bottom.
Really?
Yeah. So then you clean all the slag out and you keep welding that up. And by the time you get to the top, you got 100% x-ray quality weld. And if not, you go under the bottom and you may have to gouge a little spot, you know, grind it or gouge it's what we called it. But yeah, man, we were doing that kind of quality of work, you know, but I'm sitting here like I'm looking at some of these older guys and they wore out. I'm just being honest with you. Yeah. They're wore out, Chase. These guys are like 40 years old and they look like they're 70. And I'm sitting here going, this what am I going to do? You know, and they're making the same money I'm making. So what am I going to do?
Dead end road.
So I noticed these cats that are real clean, man, they're welders and they got their old billet or hat flipped over their ears and they got the fancy shields and their khaki shirts, man, they're clean. Like my shirts are burnt and stuff and got tape holding the buttons on, and these guys are clean, and they're telling the boss what they're going to do. And I'm like, who are these guys? Pipe welders. Guess what I wanted to be?
A pipe welder.
Yeah, so here we go. Pipe welder. I watch them. Start seeing what they do compared to what I do, and I decided I want to be a pipe welder. So as I'm flux core welding, I go to school to become a certified pipe welder, and I learn just the basic stuff at night and DuPont's hiring. So I go in the DuPont, and I had some friends in there, and I made a mess of the test right off the bat. I'm like shaking, and I'm scared, and I don't know, and I have no experience. And I know I can weld, but I can't weld like this stuff. So a guy that's a friend of the guy that told me about the job, he said, man, let me see that. He said, this is what you need to do right here. He said, watch this. And he fires up, and he says, is that what you would do? And I said, that's exactly what I would do. And he was like, yeah, there you go. So I butchered up the rest of it, and he put that little piece in there, and I capped it off, and it looked like a mess, but they hired me. And DuPont, BE&K contractor, turned me into a pipe welder. And man, that was like a really good thing in my life, because it put me on another level. So the problem with it is I got laid off pretty frequently doing that, because I was always the low man on the pole, and I never really was committed anywhere. I never really got committed anywhere. So anyway, I moved on from DuPont, worked at Wellman, which was another pipe welding job over in Purlington, Louisiana. Worked in DuPont in Laplace, Louisiana. Got laid off, went to Arkansas, worked on the Razorback Stadium up there on some staircases, galvanized staircases. We went up there and hung them, and I'm scared of heights, so that really wasn't a good fit for me. So I'm 120 feet up in the air in a boom, like one of them lift things.
Wasn't Jamie Farb with you?
Jamie Farb was with
me.
He's not scared of heights, yeah. So he's laughing. Dude, I was useless, because I had to stay. I was like nails hanging on, and he's like, and at 120 feet up in the air, one of them lifts, when you pull the thing, you don't move like instant. It takes it a second, so you're naturally going a little further, like, why ain't it moving? And then when it moves, it's like, you know, and it sway. Dude, never again. Never. I'm scared of heights about as bad as I'm scared of snakes. So, yeah. So, but I did do some welding on the Razorback Stadium. Yeah. I came home from that job, and that's when I asked your mom to marry me. I decided when I came home that I was done with that life, you know, and I had met your mom right around the time I started pipe welding. And then when I got home from that job, me and Adrian got married, and I worked at it. I went back to DuPont. I think I was at DuPont when we got married.
Then?
Yeah, I was a pipe welder from then on. I was a pipe welder, you know, and then we got married, got pregnant with you while I was working at, I had got laid off, and I hired in at Chevron in Pascagoula, the clean fuels project over there. I went in over there and pipe welding 9 chrome, like I'm steady learning more stuff. So I'm this 9 chrome, the trick to this stuff, and it was real big pipe. They had to put heaters on it. Like they had a truck that would come in. And before I could start work, like I'd get all set up and they would hook these big heaters up and that truck would roar, it'd come to life, and they had all these wires running to it. Well, it had these electric heaters wrapped around the pipe, and I had a paint stick thing, and I would just every now and then swipe it on there. And if it didn't melt, I couldn't weld on it, because that 9 chrome will crack. So it had to be a certain temperature, and then they maintained that temperature while I was welding it up, which was the greatest job ever in the wintertime, but in the summer, you didn't want no part
blistering.
Of it. But I did a lot of, you know, all of this 100% X-ray out at Chevron, 9 chrome, like we welded on some really big stuff, you know, like 48-inch pipe and stuff. Mm. But 100% X-ray wells. I left there when that project was over. I got laid off. I worked all the way through. I don't remember how long you was born and everything. And I went to work at Mississippi Power. I worked out there. They got boiler tubes and just regular pipe and stuff. Did all that. I went to Wadley and Slidell. Worked on stuff out there. Chrisman Manufacturing, we built them forklifts. They call them spiders that go on the back of a truck that moves grass, sod, sheetrock, all that kind of stuff. The little three-wheel, they build them right there in Long Beach. I think he's one of the original inventors of that business. Yeah, the Chrisman brothers right there out of Long Beach, you know, and they have their own version of it. And like I said, I think they invented a lot of the way that thing works came from them brothers down there. And while I was working down there, man, I was burnt out on welding, and things was slow, and it was hard to get jobs, and I wanted a change, and I used to read the paper back then all the time, and I remember an ad in the paper, and I still remember how the ad was. The first time it was blurry, and it said, "Coming to Biloxi," and that's all it said, and I'm like, who would waste their money on that? And then the next day, it was a little clearer, same picture, coming soon. And then every day, and eventually it was Preston Hood Chevrolet's coming to Biloxi. And I thought, man, what a waste that first. And then it was suspenseful. Like, Preston Hood Chevrolet. So I went and talked to him. I said, I'm going to go sell cars for a minute. And I learned a lot about the car business. They trained me. They were okay with me having zero car experience. And they taught me, you know, that I would be a good salesman because I was a people person. Like, I could get, like, if somebody trusts you, they'll purchase something from you. And they told me, don't lie, don't make up stories. Just if you don't know something, say, hey, I don't know, but I'll find out, you know. And that's the way I was trained by a guy named Steve Dibble. And I enjoyed that job, which my uncle was a car salesman and had made a really good living doing that.
See, but from what I've heard on the car salesman side, like, it's pretty cutthroat with you versus your employees, because you're not paid an hourly wage. You're paid commission. So you have to sell and meet quota.
So there's a code to that. There's a gentleman's code or whatever, and they call it ups. So it's a rotation. And however they pull in a driveway or the phone call, it's your turn. If you're in the bathroom and you miss your turn, you missed your turn. And that may be the guy that comes and the salesman ends up making $1,000, you know. You lost it because you was in the bathroom or you was on a smoke break or whatever. But it's a rotation to make it fair. It was interesting. And what I learned, you know, all these things that I learned helped me with my own business later on. When I did open my business, which was actually during Katrina, when Katrina hit, I actually quit my job. I was back out at Chevron. I'd done the car business for a little while. It was like probably the slowest the car business had ever been. Cause I remember them salesmen, you know, joking, saying that, man, I've seen it get like this and stay like this for a couple weeks and then the bottom fall out. And I'm sitting here like, stay like this. The bottom fell out a month ago. So you telling me it's going to get worse, you know, and they just laugh. But I couldn't stay in that business at that time. So I went back to Chevron, but I was with a different company and we was working on them tanks out there, and I was a pipe welder and a structural welder, I guess you'd call it. And Katrina happened, and I actually drug up the day before Katrina hit. Like me and my boss had a disagreement because I was one of the only ones that showed up that Saturday, and they couldn't tell me when we were leaving. Like, I worked all day. None of the rest of the crew showed up, and I just kept saying, man, it was anxiety. You know, we were all like, every news report, this thing's bigger and you better evacuate. And I'm like, man, I got stuff. I got to go get my stuff ready. And he's like, well, as soon as that crew gets ready, we're going to go help them. And finally I was like, okay. And then finally I was like, you know what? I'm done. And he's like, if you leave, you're gone. I said, get me a truck. And that ended up, I felt sick at the time, but it ended up being the greatest thing because I got my tools out of there and Chevron flooded. So I was one of the only people in my crew that got my stuff and my toolbox and tools, which I was unemployed, but didn't matter. I got out of there and I bought a welding machine after Katrina and started my own business called Reliable Welding. And made super good money right around the house, welding on dump trucks and dump trailers and all that kind of stuff. And then we moved into working on the levees over in New Orleans. And me and Wayne and several others, we made a ton of money working on the levees over there because they totally rebuilt the levees and they was put driving them H pylons in the ground and they had to be welded together and UT'd. So we made a bunch of money doing that. And Adrian and I bought the House of Tux in 06. And Adrian was 29. So I'd have been, 34? No, that's not right. I was 29.
Yeah, there's
so
no way.
Adrian was 20, 24. I was 29.
Mm-hmm.
Bought the House of Tux. I was building. I was welding. I was the breadwinner. You know, my welding fabrication was making a ton of money, building rat rods, building race cars. That was Chase One Chassis days. You know, I was doing all that kind of stuff, custom cars. What anything anybody had, you know, it didn't matter.
Just full fab shop.
Yeah, and people in the neighborhood knew that that's what I did. So if they had a shovel that needed a handle welded on it, I did it. Trailers that fenders were cracked on, it didn't matter. I didn't turn anything down. Made really good money. I built crawfish boiling pots for Claw Daddies, big stainless, you know, I did anything, custom furniture, beds, tables, whatever. I did that for several years and then things were speeding up in my personal life. You know, you, Avery, no plan of having Ruby. And then Adrian and I was going back and forth and we was like, we're either gonna have another kid or we're gonna open another business. And we decided to open another business and we opened up Back on the Rack. And that was my baby. That's what I do today. A lot of people probably don't know because it looks like I don't do anything some days. But I own Back on the Rack Upscale Resale and I wrote all the contracts. I put the whole business plan together, got it up and going. I was a part of it every step of the way, you know, did the lease with Gulfport in the original building and created quite a business. And it had a 6-month plan. It make or break. It could either go or go out of business. It didn't matter. We were going to go 6 months, give it a try. And then about 3 months, I knew I had something. Like I was like, wow, this could actually pay me back with the money I've invested, and I may actually be able to make a little bit of money.
And there was nothing like that around here.
No,
you had basic stuff that, you know, you could get whatever, but there was no high-end retail, resale business around here.
No, nothing like it. So, and that helped, you know, because people were excited about it and everything, and they still are. And anyway, so Back on the Rack did really well, and then Adrian kind of called me as a joke one day and was like, hey, can we open a second store for Cassie, our cousin in Alabama? And I said, yeah, why not? You know, we ain't scared. We got, you know, we started out with nothing, hoping it would make it at least 6 months, and here we are 6 months in, and our chest is bowed out like we're these entrepreneurs that nothing can fail. Yeah. So, yeah, let's do it. So we opened up Back on the Rack in Fairhope, Alabama. And we got it up going and handed the keys over to Cassie, and she's never looked back. She's as big as my Gulfport store. And I say that with pride because my Gulfport store does very well. And Cassie is free and clear. She's bought and paid for. She paid everything I asked her, and she owns it 100%. She still works with us hand in hand. Cassie actually helped me get another, what we'll call a franchise location in Denham Springs, Louisiana. Some customers came in, liked what Cassie was doing and asked about the business, and she's like, they'll open you one if you want it. Well, we get in touch with Angel and her husband over in Denham Springs, Louisiana. Next thing you know, I'm drawing up a contract for a back on the rack in Denham Springs, and it's over a year old, doing very well. We're looking at some more locations in the future. Angel owns hers free and clear, you know. So it's been a fun adventure doing all that kind of stuff. And I don't know what the future holds. So now I'm basically a YouTuber, a video editor, a social media influencer.
Guidance counselor.
I'm waiting on this to pay off.
Keeps me from diving off the deep end with my stuff.
Yeah.
But
I feel like I've rambled this whole time. I feel like this is like the crappiest one you ever done, because I feel like you're over here. I feel like you're looking at that clock like he's on an hour and we're just now getting it, you know. So I mean,
I can stare at them at the camera the whole time, but or I don't know. That's just my go-to place to look. Like, that's just where I go. But I was in entertained with it.
Yeah.
What's your takeaway from everything?
The bottom line, Chase, is everything I've done for all of those jobs, whether I left there on good terms or not. Like I said, I'm not sitting here saying I was the greatest employee of every single place I ever walked in, because, like I said, I probably wouldn't have employed me who I was back then. And that might be why I work alone when I do my welding. Me and Wayne's the only one that I can actually work with when I'm doing welding, because me and him, even though if you gave us a job, we would build it totally different, we can work together. I fit and he welds, or vice versa. And the takeaway, I guess, is, you know, and I'm not knocking anybody, but I see a lot of people with their heads down on these phones and they're missing out on a lot, because I've learned so much by watching how things function. And I just want to back up on one thing that has helped me to be a good, what I think a good business owner, a good employer. And I preach this to you. When I worked at one of the dealerships, I'm going to name drop it because they're out of business now. And I'm going to explain why they're out of business real quick. DeRussy Motors. I left Preston Hood, went to work at DeRussy Motors because Uncle Speck worked there and he was the general manager. And when we sold a used vehicle, and it, just say one instance, one of them had it was a diesel truck, probably an 06 back then. You know, it was fairly new, but it was on the used lot, 05, 06, diesel dually. And when you fired it up, it had a ding, 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 ding. Well, we found the step bar. It's a bolt loose. Now, I'm a salesperson. I could have got under there and found some wrenches and tightened it up. But I went in to Uncle Speck and I said, hey, this thing's got a step bar rattling. You know, what do you want me to do? Because he had a little mechanic shop down the road that we took everything to. And that's weird, because this thing's got a service department, parts department. Why ain't we using them? But that's what I'm getting at. There was no – it was like – they all had DeRussy Motors written on their shirt, but they hated each department, hated each other. So Uncle Speck says, hey, jump in it, run it over to service, tell them I said to tighten that bolt up. It's real simple. Dude, they threw a fit about it. Like, made up in front of the customer. The customer wanted to come over and watch them for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And they was like, we ain't got time to mess with that. And I'm like, yeah, Speck said to just jump and let's just tighten that bolt. I ain't gonna do that. And it made such a big deal that I'm like, you know, they own their tools, but I'm like ready to take some of them's wrenches and just get under there and tighten the bolt. And the body shop was the same way. They all, paint and body, mechanic shop, service department, parts, and sales, all combated each other all the time. And I said, that is not the way a business should work. You should, especially in front of a customer, let's take care of it and we'll work out details later, you know. And I promise you, Uncle Speck was making enough money on the truck, he could have paid them whatever that mechanic wanted instead of starting a big fight. So anyway, watch what's going on around you, but also make sure that all your departments are firing on all cylinders and y'all are all a unit, you know, rather than I see so many businesses that I just sit here and I go, racetracks, oh my gosh, don't get me started. And not saying that I know people in the past, so yeah, you think you could run a track. I think I could. I do. Do I want to?
Man.
No, I'm enjoying what I'm doing.
Especially as much as we've seen out on the road.
Yeah.
We could certainly, like, as a family, the Holland family could open up a racetrack, and it would be one of the most successful places in the South.
There's no doubt in my mind.
It could compete.
First thing I would do would put in a call to the joiners.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, hey, I'm fixing to build us a track down here that y'all will be proud to come race. I need your input. I'd call Matt Curl, and I'd say, Matt, I'm fixing to build a track. Not going to be competing against you because I'm 800 miles away.
Rodney Wayne.
What would I do? Call Rodney. Rodney, come down here. You know, let's look at this ground, and you tell me what. But I'm gonna support those guys as well, just like I do. But I'm going to call my local dirt guys. I'm not going to start name dropping because somebody will start trying to build a track out from under me. But who knows what the future holds, because I'm kind of getting antsy. And I don't know what I'm going to do. And you're not allowed to race there. That's the problem. Y'all can get mad at me and go, why would you even say that? Because that's just
how it is.
When
a series comes and rents it from you, I'm rolling in the
gate. Weekly race, if it's owned by the Hollands, he ain't allowed. Bottom line. Because I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it.
I'll Billy Walker all of your employees.
I don't care.
I'll show you.
You can do what you want. I don't know what that means. I like old Billy. He'll tell you. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I ain't trying to get Billy on us. He'll be writing bad reviews on our business before we even open it. So,
but it would certainly be successful. But, you know, the problem is you got your business. Yep. We're racing full time. Yeah. You know, the stuff.
Well, the
like
problem
that,
is, I'll tell you, the problem's finding the land to do it that you won't have to fight about it or nothing like that. So, if I found a piece of land, I think I could bring in some investors. And I think I could, and I know, like I said, there's people that well, you might find out.
I got one more question, and we got to get off of the racetrack stuff. Super speedway or bull ring?
Definitely a bull ring. Call it a bull ring. I have no desire of having some big half mile. You know, when, and I'm not knocking anybody, but when they, I don't know who influenced Outlaw to build what they built, but the first time I laid eyes on it, I was like, and some of the best racing I've been to has been
short track.
Some of the little short track race. I don't want a place where you got to knock somebody out the way to go. I'm talking about building a nice wide, let's put Deer Creek, let's put Fairbury. Let's give it. It's gonna have its own. Listen, I'm talking like we opening it.
You're drawing the footprint right here, yeah. Anyways, enough of the racetrack stuff, but eventually it sounds like you'll be a track owner down here.
We'll see.
But
maybe not.
So I guess that brings us to the conclusion. You've seen all this stuff, you got successful businesses, you like run most of the YouTube department and stuff like that. What's next?
I don't know, man. Like I said, I'm getting bored. I was looking at a new machine yesterday, not new, because I'm not trying to buy nothing new. And you're probably sitting here, what kind of machine? Because you know I'm crazy. You know I'll just buy something. I'm looking at a new skid steer.
So you're going to...
A newer skid steer.
Earth mover? What do they call them?
I want to get one of them attachments that goes through the woods.
Oh, a mulcher?
Yeah, I want one of them.
Man, they apparently make good money.
Well, I'm not trying to make money. I just...
So you're just going to try to have fun.
Yeah.
You're trying to retire.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I got you.
Yep. And I'll probably never get it, but that if a perfect day for me would be to fill my machine up and lube it and oil it and head out and
you
gone.
You ain't gonna oil it and stuff. You might fill it up. You'll call us from up here. Hey, out of diesel.
Yeah.
I know better.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I get my maintenance program from you.
Shoot, that's a compliment. You didn't get that. You did get it
outside
from me.
Outside of racing.
Yeah.
Outside of racing. Okay. I'm not talking about my race.
I was going to say, man, you got
vehicle,
a top-notch.
Toter home maintenance.
You got a top-notch operation, Chase. I am proud of you. I know I lecture you and preach to you and talk to you all the time, man, but I am. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of y'all. I'm proud of everything going on here. The big announcement coming up with your new sponsorship, man. I think we've got some great sponsors, but I'm really excited about them because I think you're going to grow in with them. And
yep.
you know, or grow with them hooked to you, I guess, right, should I right. say. But, yeah, we'll be announcing that at the Dome. And if you're a Patreon member, you found out last night who it is, and I'm excited about it.
No doubt. No yep. doubt. Well, with all of that concluded.
Like I said, I'm sorry I rambled
no,
on.
No, no.
I just feel like it was a great, I got two pages of well, jobs that I had well, here. That's terrible.
The thing for me, like I said, when it didn't bore me. It's just like you didn't get to tell the stories within the job. Like I, in my 21 years on this earth, like you've told me individual stories about each one yeah. of those jobs. And yeah. you there's just not enough time.
I know. I know.
Sit and tell every single story about them, but yep. there's some good stories along the ways.
Yeah.
Especially when you was out in the shipyards with
oh yeah,
Uncle we did Dale and stuff, Uncle Wayne man. and all of them. So, anyways, with that being concluded, what's the racing plans look like?
I'm excited about this weekend. The Fall Classic. We won it in 22. We were leading it in 23. And got in some lap traffic with Cade Dillard and popped a tire. And this is 24.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a few people that are hungry for it that are coming to get it. And I'd say we're one of them. So it ought to be some good racing. I just hope it's a good, clean race and no stupid stuff.
I'm seeking redemption in lap traffic. I hope yeah, I hope it stays green long enough for us to get in lap traffic because yep. I feel like we've developed a lot this year. And with Mikey on the sticks and everything that we've got going on, I think we'll be pretty good.
Yeah, I think so. I'm excited. I am, man. And Rocky told me last night he's excited. I mean, we're fired up about this.
I enjoy it. It's been a lot of work to get to it. But yeah, it is one of my favorite races of the year. I do wish that we could have complete shows Friday and Saturday night to kind of make it more enjoyable. That would be the only thing that I would change about it. But yeah. but overall, it's a great event. So you're in the area, check it out. Why not Motorsports Park? And then I don't know where you can watch it. Isn't it on Hunt the Front?
Yeah, this is a Hunt the Front. Okay. Man, that's why I say it's like a perfect storm for this race because normally it's a great race anyway. The Thrashes have been putting this on. This is the 30th annual.
Wow.
Yeah. And the Thrashes do a fantastic job with that. And then they have Hunt the Front tagged on that's going to do the streaming. And I think the purses are the biggest purses ever. So, man, this is going to be a good one. This is going to be a really good one. All the way through, modifies, the supers, the crates are running for big money. And there's some studs coming. You know, it's going to be exciting. Troutman's coming. Yeah. Drake Troutman. Troutfish. I heard last night Troutman's coming. I need to text him because I didn't know he was coming. But that's great, man. It's gonna be a good one.
No doubt.
Sure enough.
Well, again, we hope to see y'all there. Thank y'all for tuning in to this episode of Off the Gas and On the Mic. Let us know what you want to hear more of, less of, and we'll catch y'all on the next one.
Later.
Thank you for listening to Off the Gas and On the Mic with Chase Holland. What'd you think about what you heard? Please follow for more content just like this.